During my time at Planned Parenthood, I wasn't working directly in the center, but the center next door had a 23-week baby that they had to let it die on a little basket that they had because it came out alive.
If you've come across this episode of Dear Jane, kudos to you. It may not have been easy because it is very, very true that big tech tries to suppress the pro-life message. And with today's episode and today's content, Marcy, is going to especially be the case.
I think people will listen, and I hate to be the bearer of this bad news, but everything you've heard about the reality of Planned Parenthood, the dark reality, is true. And today's guest, Myra Rodriguez, is going to break it all down for us. She was a director at Planned Parenthood, worked at Planned Parenthood for 17 years, and just the story she tells, even if you've heard similar stories before, it's just kind of unbelievable and really gives you pause to think nothing Planned Parenthood says about itself is true. It's all a lie. And women and babies are the victims of those lies.
Dear Jane, the pro-life podcast that's going to have a Planned Parenthood Employee of the Year on. How about that? Make sure you help us, though, fight the suppression and the censorship. Make sure you hit subscribe on your platform of choice, whether that be YouTube or Spotify or Apple or wherever you may find us, and then help spread the word, because then we can then fight against the algorithms that be that kind of try to suppress the pro-life message. Maya Rodriguez, the state director for Moms of Arizona, also with TPUSA, Turning Point USA. What a story she has. Former Planned Parenthood Employee of the Year joins us today on Dear Jane. Myra, you know, it's very interesting to talk to somebody who has been knows a lot about Planned Parenthood. What's something about Planned Parenthood that we don't already know that might even shock us?
Wow, that's a hard one, right? Because, you know, as someone who was on that side for 17 years, then I come out and it's like, yeah, we know they did that. We knew they did that. You're like, I didn't know. I was inside and I didn't know, right? But I think one thing I always share that people shocked is that Planned Parenthood has more affiliates globally than there's McDonald's or Walmart in the world. People are always shocked by that, right? People are shocked by the amount of money that our taxpayers in the United States pay for globally through Planned Parenthood. People usually are not aware of that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's wild. So all around the world, they have more affiliates. Wow.
Yeah, and actually, they don't hide it. If you go on their Planned Parenthood Federation of America, which is the global, International Planned Parenthood Federation, the global one, and then you put affiliate and you pick a country. You know, if they don't have one affiliate in that country, which usually they do, even in countries where abortions are not legal, they still have affiliate. Quick example, Colombia, Pro Familia, which means pro family. That's worse than Planned Parenthood, right? You agree with me.
Yeah.
In Mexico, it's MexFam, which is, again, it's like Mex family, Mexican family. Again, you know, they always go undercover on this. Kind of like very pro-family planning, you know, things that look positive, right? And in Argentina, it's FUSA, right? And so on. So they have affiliates. And the way I explain it to people, it's the easiest way for them to launder our money. You know, it's kind of like the cartel. The cartel, I'm Mexican, so I get to speak about the cartel all I want without looking racist, right? Because, I mean, usually that's how people play it. But If you are the cartel in Mexico, I'm very close to the border, you know, we know that they launder money. I mean, recently in the news, they found this nightclub in Colorado where they busted them, and it was cartel Mexican money and cartel drugs. So that's the same way we can explain what Planned Parenthood is doing. And I like to compare them with the cartel because, I mean, a lot of their businesses is just the same thing the cartel does, right? And then on one side, we're funding this, and on the other side, we're fighting them. But just let's just go, that's how they launder our money to kill babies globally.
Wow. You know, all the time with Planned Parenthood, especially when it comes to public money, things like that, they say, well, abortion is just a really small part of what we do. I mean, it's just barely noticeable. What's the truth regarding what percentage of what Planned Parenthood does is abortion specific?
You know, Scott, I bought that lie. They fed me the lie, and I bought it for many years. See, so I got hired in 2000. Then 2016, I became a director of the abortion facility. But for 16 years, I dedicated my life, my energy, everything, my passion to defend Planned Parenthood and their side that does 93% of services, right? To the point that I would argue with people. People will be like, you all kill babies. Excuse me, ma'am. I don't kill any babies at this location, okay? I provide birth control and STDs, and I do this and I do that, and I will give my long list, right, of services and how I'm preventing abortions, right? Because abortions are only 3%. Well, Myra Naive, I got a wake-up call. See, when I start managing the abortion facility, now just to put you in context on my story, I was a director of 3 centers, right? 2 non-abortion and 1 full abortion facility. So my non-abortion facility, also known as Title 10 facility, which is the money that you hear the funding, the federal grant that they get through family planning Title 10, barely saw 16 patients a day. No one said anything to me. You know, if I saw 16 patients, great, Mayor, good job. Keep up the good work, right? Jump into the abortion facility and I start as a fresh abortion manager with a quota, you need to have 45 patients. I'm like, for abortion? Like, how? That simple math right there. That's not 3%. If my center who did birth control had about 16 patients a day and the abortion facility, I had to see 45 patients a day. That's not only 3-4 cents of the services. Another quick example was, my daily deposits on the non-abortion side were not even like probably $1,000 a day, if I will say a lot, you know, because basically we were paying for the service, right? Like taxpayers were. But the abortion facility was 20 grand a day to the point that I needed an armored person, right? Like big money trucks coming in to pick up daily deposits of how much money. And most people, if they know, you know, when you have big amount of money to deposit, it's when it's worth it to hire those money truck companies. Otherwise, it's not worth it. It costs a lot. So that's all I wanted people to think about. If that abortion facility has one of those big trucks coming to pick up money, they just imagine how much money they're collecting every time they come, right? And those were the shocking. I used to drive the deposits from the non-abortion facilities. I used to go to the bank myself, put the money in. But the abortion facility, a truck came almost every day to pick up the money. What does that mean? That means it's a lot of money and they don't want it kept in the center, right? So it was over 20 grand a day. That's not 3%. That's a lot of money.
So for such a large organization, and I'm wondering, how do they get away with all of their lies? You know, they've convinced the world that abortion's only 3% of their services. Most of what we do is helping. All of what we do is helping women. How do they get away with it?
You know, that's really funny that you asked that, because it's not that I'm a special person, right? I mean, God, I'm special to God for sure, right? I'm chosen by Him. But, you know, that's part of why my story breaks, like made it so much news, right? Because I come out, and then I sued them for wrongful termination, because in their way to try to silence me, I kept complaining and complaining. Just to put the audience in context, maybe some people have not heard my story. I work as the abortion director, and I start seeing some of the deficiencies, some of the wrongdoing, some of the hurting women, falsifying patient charts, things like that. I start calling out the abortionists. They don't like it. They fire me, right? And accusing me of something that was serious. Like they said, you had narcotics in your desk, the medications used to numb patients in your desk while you were out. So let's say you're in your office today, but tomorrow you don't show up to your office, Marcy. And then someone else comes and says, hey, I found narcotics in Marcy's office. And then on Thursday, Marcy, you're fired. Because yesterday while you were out, there was narcotics in your desk. You're like, but I wasn't here. It's your desk. And you're like, okay, what is going on, right? So my thought was, why are they accusing me? And what comment that kicked to me was, but we won't do anything we won't do anything if you just go quietly. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, we won't accuse you. We won't do a police report. Like basically, oh, you're being too nice, right? So what did I find out? Well, I find out through my lawsuit against them that for far too long, they've been quieting employees that complain, either by coming to an agreement with them, patients too, or literally dismissing, because obviously they found something wrong the employee was doing. And it's like, well, you know, you did that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what I found out, right? That it's very hard to go against them. And that's why people were surprised that I won a lawsuit against them, because usually that doesn't happen, because they get away with murder. Literally, they do. You know, and I think as part of it is, and I don't want to get too political, and I always say that someone that gave me the grace of telling me, don't say that, be proud. But it is true that we have to be making our politicians accountable. Look what happened in Texas. For how long we had that heartbeat law, right? And basically banning all abortions. And then all of a sudden we noticed that there's a couple people doing abortions illegally. They didn't just start. I'm sure they've been doing them. I'm sure they never stop. We need to hold our politicians that we elect more accountable to go after them. One quick thing that I'm going to tell you how is the inspections. As a Planned Parenthood non-abortion facility, my inspections were not scheduled ever. It was just like a restaurant. They show up unannounced, you know, when I'm open. At Planned Parenthood, abortion facility, they were scheduling my inspections. That shocked me. I was like, wait, I get a head start? Like, I get head start that they're coming? I get to clean up and perfect and show the church that I want to show? How is that possible? How is it that this industry gets away with that when a restaurant can get closed today if they showed up unannounced and they found something serious? And that's, honestly, that's on us. And unfortunately, today we made things worse. Those propositions that passed in many of our states allowed them to be like this. Yep. No licensing required. We won't even know if they're an abortion facility anymore. Inspections reduced to the minimum. You know, worse than, like, even a hair salon and a nail salon gets inspected more than an abortion facility. How did we get here? That's how little we care about women. You know, the other day I was speaking at a college here in Arizona, and one of the audience members, she was very pro-abortion. And when she said something about that, well, maybe they need to reform the abortion industry, I say, sweetie, they've been doing abortions the same way since before it was legal, because they don't care. And there's not, and I just told her the simple way. So in what way can we reform an abortion and not kill a baby? Like, there's just not a way to do that. That's where they don't care. They don't care.
What kind of questionable health practices or things have you seen or become aware of that that put women in danger?
You know, Scott, one of the hardest things for me to swallow was that for 16 years, every time a woman came into my center and I told her, hey, so you're pregnant. And she's like, oh, what do I do now? And, you know, well, you can have an abortion. Abortions are safe. It's safer than carrying that baby to full term. You're going to be in and out. You're going home. Nothing happened. Tomorrow, back to normal. The pill, just like Tylenol. Bleed a couple days, not problem, right? You got this. It's easy. Don't worry about it, right? You can move on with your life very easy. I get to the abortion facility and it's like, there's a moment that you realize that you bought the lies, you fed the lies to people, and it's not true. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I notice the most, which is on my lawsuit, is that I call out daily complications unreported. That means that daily there was complications that the doctor didn't even care to report, on top of the ones he didn't even notice that happened. And one of them is perforating women. So one of the high risk of aspiration abortions, which are done from 6 weeks on, it's perforating women. And that means perforating their uterus, perforating their intestines, some organ, that's a risk. And it's on their paperwork. They're not lying about it because it is on their paperwork. What they're lying about is that it doesn't happen as frequently as they say it does, right? Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that it's on us. Who does these statistics about abortion complications? They do.
Right.
I mean, they get to report their own complications. I always give the example of my husband. We own a trucking company. My husband doesn't get to call the FMCSA and say, hey, I want you to know that I have a flat tire today or my truck is in perfect condition. No, my husband's truck gets inspected. No one believes my husband. No one's going to believe, oh, you're telling me you haven't had a single drink in a whole year, so I shouldn't even test you for drugs or alcohol? No, they get tested. But here, they do their own reporting. And that was another thing that shocked me. They get to report if they had a complication, and I call out the abortionists that they don't report that. Another thing that I noticed was that if the woman showed up with a slightly blood pressure high, that disqualifies her from the abortion pill. All of a sudden, they retake the blood pressure, usually the doctor or his hand nurse, the left nurse that he has always with him, and all of a sudden, the blood pressure is fine. Or if their iron level is low, all of a sudden, they redo it and it was fine. Like I remember one day I say, so all of a sudden, my staff is dumb and doesn't know how to do what they've been doing every day because she redoes it and it's fine, right? But it is the perforations that I call out that happen the most. It is those complications that go on reporting the left leaving baby part inside, which is one of the big reports I had done too. They left the baby part inside and he wasn't hearing about it. That happens a lot, to the point that we had legislations in many states prevented that from happening, right? And then now, again, it has been removed from many of those states with those propositions that were recently on the ballot. So, but those are the major things that I noticed. Now, with the abortion pill, I used to tell women, you know, when you feel that big blood clot, just go down to the toilet, flush it, and you'll go back to the bed. That's it. That happened. So, you know, and then as a center director, I got phone calls in the middle of the night, and they were like, so you guys told me that when I get a big clot, just to push it on the toilet, I didn't make it. I felt it, but I wasn't sure, and I didn't make it. So, but it's not a clot. It looks like a baby. Like, I can see the hands and feet and their face. What do you want me to do? Should I save it? Should I take it to you guys? And I'm instructed to tell her, no, just still flush it down the toilet and don't look. Right? And can you imagine the trauma? Like, that's a big trauma, right? Or it's just as simple as Tylenol. You're going to bleed like a period. And then I got those phone calls. I still remember their voice. I think I'm going to die. Like, I'm bleeding so much and this hurts so bad that I think I'm going to die. And then you're instructed to her, oh, you're okay. Just put some heating pad, ibuprofen, lift up your feet, call me back in the morning. You know, dismissing them of that way they're feeling at that moment, which is scared. You know, they're feeling they're scared. They're alone with that pill in their apartment. I mean, we have all seen my friend's Abby Johnson's Unplanned movie, and that clip right there gets everyone when she's alone in the bedroom. We have heard from many women how a neighbor got to them because they were all alone when they were screaming of excruciating pain. Right. But those are the things that they denied of happening. Right. And they do, like, they keep saying it's just Tylenol, like Viagra has a lot more side effects than the abortion pill. I hate when they say that, you know, because it's a laugh of the face of all those women that have gone through hell because of that pill.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm sure it makes the women who do experience those horrific adverse effects think that there something must be wrong with them, or they did something wrong. You know, we've heard kind of anecdotally for years these horror stories of women who take the abortion pill, and just recently that report came out showing that it's way worse than the FDA has ever let on, than the abortion industry has ever let on. Do you think that that news is going to change anything? I mean, it just feels like no matter what kind of new information comes out, that somehow Planned Parenthood and the other side always spins it to say, you know, how are they going to wiggle their way out of this one?
I think that they will find a way. You know, first of all, they pay a lot of money, right, to get into social media. And I mean, you guys have one of the greatest podcasts, and the shadow ban is real, right? If it wasn't for a lot of us trying to share the content, like, people wouldn't even know that we are out there, right? Which is so sad that we live in this world where we can constantly, as someone speaking against what everyone should be against, at least I tell people this, at least understand, this is a corporation that has profit on women. Like, Can we at least agree on that, right? And they should, just for that, they should be against that, right? Unfortunately, the amount of money they have to promote social media and paid actresses, I mean, what can we call them? Actresses. Because I can promise you, I have never met, in my 17 years working for Planned Parenthood, never once have I met a woman that was happy to have her abortion done. Never once did a woman return to my center and say, hey, Myra, thank you for helping me have the abortion last week. Not once did any woman came back to thank me for anything. So when I hear these testimonies of women either jumping on TikTok of happiness or looking happy after an abortion, I'm sorry, I'm going to call that bluff, because it is not true, because I was there and all I saw was women devastated at the end of the day. I never saw someone jumping out of happiness for what they have done. I never got a phone call of someone, hey, I'm calling just to let you know that you have been the best thing that happened to me today or last week or this year. Never. So, and that's a simple fact right there, right? So I do hope that people are waking more to their reality. Unfortunately, we are facing a world that has become very inhumane towards babies. I mean, we all know, right? It is one of the things, I mean, I always tell people that when they say like, oh, don't show the babies, don't show the babies from abortion, it's what woke me up, right? Until I saw those baby pieces, until I got to that room of the products of conception room, and I saw them laying out, you understand what you're doing. Like, so I'm all for it. No, keep talking about it. Keep talking, like don't hide the pain that those babies are going through, because I strongly believe that's the only thing that will wake up humanity. We need one of those ultrasounds that we can hear the thoughts of the babies. Maybe Elon Musk will come up with that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier that I just want to circle back around to, because, and then you just mentioned it again, because I think it's uncomfortable and heartbreaking for people to hear about this, but I think it's an important part of the equation that a lot of people don't understand. And that is, with surgical abortions, the way they're supposed to ensure that none of the body parts remain inside the woman, is in that products of conception room, right? They're supposed to lay out all of the pieces. Can you just kind of describe that briefly? Let people, because that, I think that's a part of the process that people don't think about,
and they don't even think this, it happens. Yeah. Like, they don't believe us. Like, you're like, I saw it with my own eyes, many, right? And they don't believe that it happens, right? Like, I even shared that during my time at Planned Parenthood, I wasn't working directly in that center, but the center next door, I was door B for birth control, door A for abortion, that's literally what they call it. Had a 23-week baby that literally the staff shared that they had to let it die on a little basket that they had because it came out alive. So, and people don't believe us that that happens. But abortions after 12.6 weeks happen through the dismemberment of the baby in the womb. And what does that mean? They have to rip their baby parts. And the way they do that is so they won't come out alive, right? Because in someone's mind, that's a lot less evil than allowing the baby to come out and letting it die, which of course it is, but it is still as evil because they're dismembering them and they're feeling pain. So he puts everything on a metal container. Then the assistant surgical person goes into this room. For the most part, he's supposed to follow her, and together as a team, they're supposed to look at everything, the placenta. There's two legs, feet, hands, a head, right? A torso, umbilical cord, because nothing has to be left inside the mother, right? And that's their job to do it. So imagine you take this baby, you know, it looks like a baby. It is a baby. And then you put it on a little glass, like a pie glass, against one of those lights like the ultrasonographers used to use before. And you set it up against that light. And then you start counting the pieces and are literally putting back together the broken baby to make sure it's all there. And then once it's done, you dump it into a Ziploc bag to throw it into a red bag. And then if they have no use for those babies, because as you know, many states do allow the practicing of fetal remains, which they go to a lab and then they get to do whatever they want with those baby bodies. But in states that they don't allow that, or when they don't have use for them, that bag gets picked up by medical waste. And what do I mean by that? I mean the same place that picks up all the gas from hospitals, from prisons, all this trash from the hospitals pick up the remains of these babies to cremate them along with the trash. They don't even get disposed like any adult grown or born human, which they're already human, but there's not even a law that protects them to be disposed the correct way that anyone who died in a hospital would have. You know, they just get thrown in the trash and burned with the trash. And that's how that gets done. And I mean, they don't hide it. If they go into even in any of the companies, the BioCycle recycle people, they have it in there described. You know, it's nothing that it's secret. It's out there. It's public information. People really just have to look for it. But even right now with artificial intelligence, AI, if you just ask them, most people use ChatGPT or AI. If you ask them, how do they dispose of the babies in an abortion facility, it will describe it.
Right. Wow. What you described in the, what do they call it, the conception room or the yes. products of conception room? What you described, I would imagine seeing it one time would impact me in a way that I just can't even imagine. Just once. Mm-hmm. How has it impacted somebody who has seen it many, many times?
You know, the story of many abortion workers are similar to mine, but a bit different. So I work on non-abortion facilities, and I manage to stay away from that side for many years, right? Even as a director, I will try to avoid that room as much as possible. I kind of knew what was there, you know? I kind of have seen it with the glimpse of my eye, but I'm not going to be part of it, because in some kind of fantasy line, you think that if you're not doing that, you're not at fault, right? Like, okay, my hands are not fully into the blood. Right? Just because I haven't stepped into that room. Now, it's different when you get to do it every day. To me, it was a wake-up call. To many other abortion workers, it kind of dehumanizes them. You know, they start seeing it every day until they become norm to seeing them, right? And cold to seeing them, right? What happened to me was the actual opposite. Every day, as I got closer to that, I start waking up and, wait a minute. Right? The phone calls of the patients, the trauma of the patients, seeing them, you know, to the point of I'm signing off, you know, to go and dispose these babies. The reality is I only lasted 10 months as a director of the abortion facility after being with them for over 16 years. That's all it took for me, 10 months there. And I can assure you those were the 10 worst months of my life. I couldn't sleep. I became angry, a very angry person. And one of the things I share is that when they offered me to take over the abortion facility, I quickly said, no, thank you, because I have heard everyone's unhappy there. I mean, how could you not be unhappy? You're right. Killing people for the living, right? So I strongly believe that every day when the people stay there, they become desensitized to it. They start not seeing the baby and they start believing, oh, just tissue. You see it as a tissue. It's like you repeat that lie 100 times and it becomes your truth, right? And I think, honestly, that's what they do. Abortion is done, ask me. I can't figure them out. I honestly, after working with many of them, cannot figure them out. They are insensitive. Most of them are atheists. They make fun of people who are believers or religious. I had an abortionist that I remember, she knew I was Catholic, and she's like, why don't you go pray with the people on the sidewalk? That suits you better. You know, and it was like, okay. You know, I remember that her jokes about it were just, you know, were to way too mean. Like, she was a bully.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So after working for Planned Parenthood for 17 years, what was it that finally just made you walk away and say, I can't do this anymore?
You know, it was a 19-year-old. So after calling all these atrocities that I have already seen, you know, every day, call me naive, but I was hoping they were going to do something about it. You know, I mean, I always make this kind of a joke that in 2016, I got the Employee of the Year award. And I'm like, I'm certain I'm going to get 2017 too, because I've been calling what's wrong at this center, right? Which is what they hire me, right? You will think that someone that cares no matter what will be thankful of someone showing them what's going on inside their business, right? And, but it was the opposite. So, there was a 19-year-old and she was 14 weeks pregnant, and the staff that was his assistant came to my office, really worried. And she says, Myra, I'm missing the head. He's leaving. He inserted an IUD, which is, intrauterine device, which looks like a T, a very small T. And she knew. Now, I'm talking about a person that barely went to medical assistant school, which means it's what, like a 6-month program, no medical background, high school medical assistant. She knew what could happen to that 19-year-old with fetal remains and an IUD. And she was worried because she couldn't find the head. The abortionist, OBGYN, graduated from a university, medical license, have been an OBGYN for many, many years, because he's like 70 now, you know, knew what he had done and didn't care. You know, he was leaving. He was going home. And she came to my office and said, I don't know what else to do. He's leaving. I can't find it. I told him to hold the patient in the room. And I know he's going to fire me for coming and telling you, but I can't let him go. So I said, don't worry about it. I'll go to the back. And then I said, I help her. We look everywhere. We look on the jars. We look everywhere. And he just looks at me and says, go find one in the trash. That moment, like something clicked on me, besides feeling that feeling on your stomach that, you know, something make you really sick. The way he said it, right? The way he didn't care about the 19-year-old. I'm a mother. My daughter was almost her same age, and that just triggered for me. I mean, that could have been my daughter, someone's daughter. And then that baby, trash, that's all it is to him. You know, the reality is that to them, the babies are trash. Like literally, that's what they think they are. They're trash. They dispose of them like trash. They treat them like trash. And if they can get money out of them, just like trash. And then women, to them, are just business. I strongly work with them, dedicating my life, thinking that I was helping women. That is the honest truth. For many years, I thought I was doing something positive in my fantasy land. That 16-year-old, after that abortion, was happy, became something. Because obviously, that's the world I was living in. If you don't become something, you're not strong of a woman, right? And then that woman was able to finish her career, or she's happy now. For some reason, she's not suffering any economic issues. You know, all her social issues had been fixed by that abortion that I helped her get, right? The truth hits you hard, and you understand that's not what's happening. And now that I have met millions, I haven't met hundreds or thousands, but millions of women that have been hurt by abortion, it's like, why are we still defending that, right? So honestly, the wake-up call was realizing that A, it wasn't helping women. B, the babies were just treated as trash, and they don't deserve that.
Mm-hmm. Does Planned Parenthood care about choice, or do they have a preferred outcome in mind when a woman visits them?
They have a preferred outcome. So a couple quick stories that I have is when I used to go to schools to talk about sex ed, you know, part of my job as a director was to go into the community. And I remember the first couple of times I talk about abstinence. I strongly believe in abstinence forever, even working there, because I mean, come on, that's a smart one, right? Especially with children, 12 years old, 13 years old. But the first couple times, my supervisor, they sent someone with me to watch me. And she's like, Myra, they don't need their mom. They have a mom. She talks about abstinence, right? You need to talk about what you sell. Do you sell abstinence? No, you don't. You sell birth control. You sell STDs. You sell condoms. Why talk about something you don't sell, right? I remember during the training about pregnancy test results at the non-abortion facilities, the way the training goes is like, if you ask them, so yeah, you're pregnant, so have you thought about what you're doing? Well, I think I'm going to keep it. Okay, well, here's a list of resources. Goodbye. But if the woman goes, oh, well, you know, I'm not sure because my boyfriend, well, you know, we do have abortions, right? And or when the law in some states changed and they were like, you have to tell them about all their options, right? Okay, well, the law says I have to tell you that you can do adoption or continue your pregnancy, but here is the abortion, right? They're very quick to work around what the law is requiring again, right? So you're very quick to call out that and dismiss the women that are not for your business and spend time for the ones that are for business, right? Because again, I'm not offering here prenatal care. I don't have that. So why will I talk about something I don't even know, right? And the way they train you is they don't train you like, I don't want you wasting time with a pregnant woman that it's happy. No. It's like, well, you know, you don't want to give her the wrong advice because she's happy pregnant and you don't want to be liable for giving any wrong information. So the best thing we can do is just give them resources and have them go on their way and don't waste their time. You see the psychological play, which is what they do all over social media, right? That's the way they train their employees too. It's a psychological game, right? Like, you know, don't say the word baby because you could traumatize that woman forever. Right? You don't want to cause trauma on her, right? The reality is they don't want them to know it is a baby, right? Or don't have pictures of your kids. You never know the situation that woman is into. So let's not have anything that talks about children, right? And I mean, and all you're like, well, no, you're right. I don't want to hurt another woman, right? I don't want to cause her pain. Same thing with the ultrasound. You know, don't show her the ultrasound, even if she asks. Even if she asks to see the ultrasound, wow. Well, you know, we strongly advise you not to because, what are you going to do after you see it, the trauma you're going to have? I mean, we strongly advise you not to. Do you still want to? What woman's going to say yes? I just told you we'll give you trauma. It will make it worse for you. So why would you say yes, right? Because they know the power of that ultrasound. So it is a psychological game that they do, and they do it. I mean, you notice the media. I mean, look at it. The way they come out as the victims. I remember my lawyer, when we were starting the lawsuit, he's like, I'm going to keep this quiet. We're going to make this about a wrongful termination and not a pro-life, pro-abortion issue because they get to play victim every time it goes that way. And that is, and I think that's what they do. Honestly, I think they have very smart people that they have hired to know how to twist the mind of the people.
Does Planned Parenthood intentionally target minority communities?
Oh, yes. So, how I got the job, right? So, how did I start working for Planned Parenthood? Okay, if my accent didn't give me away, guys, I'm Mexican. I moved here from Mexico when I was about 18. That's about 30 years ago. So, yeah, I just gave my age. But anyways, I moved in here, you know, coming from Mexico. I wanted to be a doctor. Obviously, the dream was a little impossible being in a foreign country. I had a visa. I came with a visa, okay? I always like to specify that. My friend was working for Planned Parenthood, and she's like, hey, you like all that medical stuff? Why don't you come work where I work? They need people who speak Spanish to go into the Hispanic communities. And I'm like, I want to help people. I want to help my people. I speak Spanish, and I like the medical field. I mean, I have my diploma as a medical lab technician from Mexico, so I have some knowledge of medical terminology in Spanish, and I like that field. So, yeah, of course. And they start training me to go into the Hispanic community, specifically the immigrant communities. How? Well, one of the things they use, and they are using it now, you know, in our center, you don't have to worry about being deported. You are welcome here. Right. I remember one of the quick things they use in Arizona when we had that. It was SB 1070 law, which a lot of people call racist. And basically it was misinformation about what the law will do. But basically they were saying that if they showed up in the hospital, they will get deported. Right. Like kind of what they're doing now. And I remember that I was trying to go into the communities and tell women, hey, you know, but if you have the abortion, but if you continue pregnancy, you could get deported, right? Can you imagine that mother? I mean, she's going to choose to kill their baby. It is very simple for people to see that because all Planned Parenthood locations are located on the minority communities. And I like to say that that's why they need to keep being funded, right? Because they're in the minority communities. But the actual service they provide the most for those communities have nothing to do with the funding they receive, right? They have to do with abortions. They promote abortions and they sell them abortions. So, I mean, here in Arizona, 42% of the abortions in Arizona are Hispanic. You know, how is that possible? How is it that we're almost at 50% of abortions in Arizona just from Hispanics? I can't even imagine the numbers from California. I don't have them, but I'm sure they're over 60% Hispanic abortions, right? So, I mean, they do target them, and we shouldn't be surprised at this. Margaret Sanger started it the same way. She hired Black people, so then the Black people will feel comfortable. That's what they do, right? With our ministry, with abortion workers, and then they were none, with our ministry, I mean, we noticed. You know, when it was a community with high African Americans, the workers that left that site were African American. Like California, a lot of Hispanic workers left the industry and are part of ministry, right? Like that, you can see it by location, based on the minority or based on the community that it's vulnerable. You can see they hire the staff. Why? Because you'll feel comfortable, right? You'll feel comfortable if I'm from your race and your color, and I'm telling you, this is good for you.
You are to be commended for being brave and telling your story. I'm sure that it does come with a cost. And so thank you very much for what you do. If you'd like to connect with Myra, visit her website, myrarodriguez.org. She can be someone who can speak. And if you want to hear more of her story or just connect with her, we encourage you to visit that website. Myra, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thank you.